I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, text number 1, the most confidential knowledge. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Tute Guyatamam Pravakshamanu Suyave Jnana Vigyana Sahitam Yajgyatva Mokshase Shubhat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." You're doing the translation? Should we start over? Yes, we'll repeat the verse. Once you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 9-1. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, that's the easy English. Try that again. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, we got some response. "My dear Arjuna," that was easier, "because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." We can tell that the devotees think that this is very confidential knowledge because they never talk about it. But we'll say something about it today. As a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages, quote, "The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars for his realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to a higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this 9th chapter matters more confidential than any he has already disclosed." The very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, is more or less an introduction to the rest of the book. And in the second and third chapters, the spiritual knowledge described is called confidential. Topics discussed in the 7th and 8th chapters are specifically related to devotional service, and because they bring enlightenment in Krishna consciousness, they are called more confidential. But matters which are described in the 9th chapter deal with unalloyed pure devotion. Therefore, this is called the most confidential. One who is situated in the most confidential knowledge of Krishna is naturally transcendental. He therefore has no material pangs, although he is in the material world. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said, although one who has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord is situated in the conditional state of material existence, he is to be considered liberated. Similarly, we shall find in the Bhagavad Gita, the 10th chapter, that anyone who's engaged in that way is a liberated person. Now, the first verse has specific significance. The word idam gyanam, this knowledge, refers to pure devotional service, which consists of 9 different activities: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. By the practice of these 9 elements of devotional service, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When one's heart is thus cleared of material contamination, one can understand the science of Krishna. Simply to understand that a living entity is not material is not sufficient. That may be the beginning of spiritual realization, but one should recognize the difference between activities of the body and the spiritual activities of one who understands that he is not the body. In the 7th chapter, we have already discussed the opulent potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different energies, the inferior and superior natures, and all this material manifestation. Now in the chapter 9, the glories of the Lord will be delineated. The Sanskrit word anusuyave in this verse is also very significant. Generally, the commentators, even if they are highly scholarly, are all envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the most erudite scholars write on Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they are envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. The commentaries given by devotees of the Lord are bona fide. No one can explain the Bhagavad Gita or give perfect knowledge of Krishna if he is envious. One who criticizes the character of Krishna without knowing him is a fool. So such commentaries should be very carefully avoided. For one who understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pure and transcendental personality, these chapters will be very beneficial. So the text again. Idam tu te, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, idam tu te kuyatamam pravaksham anu suyave jnana vijnana sahitam yajgatva moksha se shubhat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." In the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that one lady had inquired from him whether Prabhupada could recommend an edition of the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, unfortunately, although there are hundreds of translations in English of the Bhagavad Gita, he could not recommend any of those Bhagavad Gitas to that particular lady, because he said that in every commentary that he had read, the speaker had put in his own understanding about Krishna. That if we want to take a medicine, then we should take it according to the directions on the label or the directions of a bona fide physician. We can't take it according to our own whimsical understanding. If we go into a pharmacy and we look at all the different medicines and we say, well, there's a saffron bottle and it matches my dhoti, so I'll take 2 of those. And my girlfriend has a pink sari on, so I'll take 3 of those. And I like the color green, so give me a couple of green bottles too. You can do that, but that's not a very good way of being treated. One has to take the directions according to the label on the bottle, what it's meant for, as well as according to the qualified physician. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says many times that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People may not like that, They may question who elected him as God. And if they did, was it a fair vote? My name was not on the ballot. But Krishna says he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada writes that also Srila Vyasadeva, Sankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, they also proclaim that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's not that Arjuna was Krishna's friend, and to flatter Krishna, Krishna said, yes, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. Yeah, you're also God. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. So if you want to be God, fair enough, you're also God. We don't want to be too restricted. We're quite liberal. Everyone is gods, including Krishna. But the Brahma Samhita proclaims Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhujami, that Krishna is God. I don't think any of our names are listed in the Brahma Samhita, so at least Brahma didn't think that any one of us were God. He thought Krishna was God. Prabhupada writes, at least if we want to get any value from reading Bhagavad Gita, at least theoretically, we should accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, what's the use of reading the Bhagavad Gita? Everything we read will think, well, maybe this is a mistake. I know one devotee, he spends hours a day reading, which is highly recommended, but he only reads to find mistakes. And every time he has a question, he always expresses in terms of doubts. How can this be true? How can that be true? This is wrong. Why is this, etc. So at least theoretically we have to accept that Krishna could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then Prabhupada writes, in that submissive spirit, maybe we can derive some benefit from reading Bhagavad Gita. In the same way, we should theoretically accept that Srila Prabhupada... Oh, my watch has gone crazy. I said something wrong. My watch is a smart watch. We should also accept theoretically that Prabhupada is the direct representative of Krishna. Unfortunately, there are many visions of Prabhupada. Everyone has their own Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada was an old Indian gentleman. He didn't understand the Western culture. Prabhupada was a nice person, or he became self-realized by, after some years, whatever. Everything except for what Prabhupada says. So we should also accept Prabhupada as Krishna's pure representative. And therefore, whatever he writes in his purport is as good as Krishna writing it. That, as Prabhupada wrote about Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura one time, that his words are as good as the Vedas. Otherwise, what's the use of reading the Bhagavad Gita if everything we're trying to figure out whether Krishna got it right or Prabhupada got it right? Then how could we ever follow what he says? Because we'll always be in doubt. We're already in doubt. The whole material existence is doubting. Just like Krishna keeps on saying, or I keep on repeating what Krishna said. When I joined the movement, we didn't have a Bhagavad Gita. There was no Bhagavad Gitas. We had one line from the Bhagavad Gita, and we didn't have the Sanskrit. It was only a translation. That the embodied soul is continuously passing in this body from boyhood to youth to old age. So similarly, the soul passes into another body at the time of death. The self-realized souls are not bewildered by such a change. See, I heard it so many times, I remember it. So that's all we had. We heard it over and over and over again until we might have even accepted it a little bit. So we've heard that this body's changing, and who's going to doubt that? Who's going to say, no, my body's not changing? Sometimes people say like that. We don't take them very seriously, though. We know of a good person in a white coat who will take them more seriously. But everyone knows their bodies are changing, but they themselves within the body, they're always the same. How can someone say, no, I've changed? If you change, how can you be saying it? Be someone else saying it. So everyone knows inherently that the body changes, but the self within the body, ourselves, we're not changing, that we're eternal. But still we have doubts whether that's true or not. And generally we don't live life as a soul, we live life as a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Sometimes we walk into the temple with our halo on, we get it at the door, and then we walk out and suddenly, a little tail goes and you got to tuck in. Because we're not completely convinced that actually I'm a soul and therefore I should live life like a spiritual soul with a spiritual objective. Therefore, there is doubts, but doubts can be taken away, as Krishna says, these doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed with the weapon of knowledge. Therefore, hearing from Krishna or from Krishna's bona fide representatives are meant to take away our doubts, specifically about two things. One is that whether or not we're this body or a spiritual being, or whether or not Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or he's just another person claiming to be God, like the rest of us. But if theoretically we accept what Krishna says and then try to apply it, then Krishna says he's also in everyone's heart and he'll help anyone, according to their sincerity, not only understand what he's saying, but also realize it, that it becomes realized. For instance, Krishna says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva, Svapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshana, that the learned and the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with an equal vision the learned and gentle Brahman, the cow, the dog, and the dog eater. Do you want the verse? You already translated it. 5:18. So vidya, knowledge. What is knowledge? It's knowledge is not all kinds of book knowledge about how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin. That may be a kind of knowledge, but it's not very valuable to realizing that we're eternal. Because we only have one problem in the material world. Oh, we have a lot of problems. Everyone has a lot of problems. We have one main problem. And if we solve that problem, then at least we'll become peaceful and happy. Namely, we think we're going to die. And what's the symptom? We think the body is growing old. No one wants the body to grow old. We say, well, please don't grow old. I'm sorry. I got to grow old. It's just, that's life. And then we become diseased. Just like we look around, hardly anyone is sitting straight. Because we're out of ease. And of course we can try and sit up straight. And then we die. We leave the body. No, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. I love you, body. Sorry. Time's up. You can't pay the rent. You're out. And then we take birth again. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Everyone's crying and screaming when they get out. And everyone's going, happy birthday. The only one who's happy is the mother because she finally got out. Everyone else is looking forward to a life of misery trying to hear your screams at night. And then we go through the whole thing again, and then at the end we die. and no one's singing "Happy Death Day to You." Although when you come out, "Happy Birthday," yeah, you're sure right. I heard that before. So life is a struggle in the material world, and everyone's going through the same struggle. But because we don't see things properly, therefore, what is the struggle? The struggle is to maintain the body as long as possible and to somehow or another make the body comfortable and secure against all the other competing forces in the material nature. Just like I said, that when I went to the parliament of Ljubljana, Slovenia, they have on the parliament in one room the history of Slovenia. How Slovenia, there was some kind of cruel dictator. They fought against him and lost. Then the next cruel dictator came. They fought against him and lost. Then the next crueler dictator came. They fought against him and lost. They always lose, but they're nice. They're good. Small but beautiful. So the history of the material world is everyone struggling against so many other people and living entities and circumstances, and eventually we all lose. But in the meantime, we think someone's ahead that we are. Someone's bigger, faster, stronger, smarter, wealthier, whatever, than we are, and we want to get what they have. We want to make sure that the people below us don't take what we have, and the people we get from the people above what they have. But we don't actually understand that none of these things have anything to do with our real self. That everyone is a soul and everyone has exactly the same interest to realize their eternal nature. And even beyond that is to realize the source of everyone, the source of everything, namely Krishna. Because as Krishna says, he's the one who's controlling everything. He's the one who, if he's pleased, then everyone becomes pleased. And he's actually our real friend. The person who put the sun in the sky, who put the moon in the sky, who's giving us the air to breathe, the body that we're in, that we do things with. He gave it to us not because he doesn't like us. He gave it to us as an opportunity to understand our relationship with him. And since he's the source of all love and pleasure, as much as we understand our relation with him, then everyone has an equal opportunity to become happy, to find love and pleasure. And as much as one is envious that why should he be God? Why can't I be God in my own little kingdom? Why can't I at least imagine I'm God? I can't be God, that's a fact. But at least I can imagine I can be God. And no one's going to interfere with that. And if they do, then I'll take another drug so I can go into my own world and be God there. And if that doesn't work, then they have these goggles you put on and you can live in your little world, virtual reality. This whole world is a virtual reality because we're eternal souls just living a virtual reality. Virtual nightmare for most of us in Kali Yuga. The only time we wake up from the nightmare is when we go to sleep. So that's because we want to be something we're not. Instead of becoming a happy spirit soul, we'd rather be a miserable illusion. But Krishna is very, very kind. He's giving us an opportunity, everyone an opportunity, to realize their relationship with him, especially in this age, of course, we say by chanting of Krishna's name, Because as mentioned here, there is the material nature, which is existing more or less partly in our imagination, what we think is going on. There's something going on. It's just not what we think is going on. It's going on. We don't see things clearly. We're a little intoxicated by illusion. In any case, there is something going on, and we can understand what's going on if we act appropriately. That is, if we can try to understand that there's something called the material nature, which we happen to be presently in, and the material nature is constantly changing, and there are different qualities of the material nature which are different from ourselves. Just like our body. Our body, my hand doesn't want to be happy. It's perfectly content to just be a hand. It never makes any complaint, never talks to me, never complains. It's completely neutral. But I myself have an aspiration. I want love, I want peace, I want friendship, I want so many different things. But this body, it just wants to eat and sleep, mate, and defend, that's all. That's the only thing it ever demands from me. And my mind, of course, my mind has many other demands, but basically it's the same thing. But the soul wants peace, love, happiness, friendship, so many different things. So it's a different nature. We're conscious, we're alive. While the body and the material nature is not alive. Now here it says that the words about Krishna, including Krishna's name, his form, his quality, his pastimes, they're all alive, they're all spiritual. As I said at the beginning of the class, we may not know that, we may not experience that, but at least, as explained here, theoretically we might accept it and therefore act according to it and see what the result is. Just like we're chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhupada used to say. We can chant, we chant on our beads, these beads, we chant sometimes 2 hours or more hours simply saying the same thing over and over again because people think we're mindless. They even say, what's the time? Hare Krishna. What's the weather like? Hare Ram. But we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we can keep on doing it because it's spiritual. It's not material. It's of a different nature. Now try and chant Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck. Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, MickeyMouse, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck. How often can you do it? How long can you do it for? How many rounds of Mickey Mouse can you chant? Because the holy name of Krishna and Krishna himself are none different. Similarly, if we hear Bhagavad Gita, even we hear the same thing over and over again. For instance, that the body's changing, but we're not changing. Now when we forget that, it's not very nice. And if we hear it again and we remember it, maybe it goes a little deeper and we become a little relieved thinking, I'm eternal. I'm going to live forever. How nice. Of course, living forever, we should, as it's mentioned here also, we should live forever in a nice place. To find out you're eternal is good, but to find out you're going to be eternally in hell is not what we're looking for. So it's not only we're eternal, but there's an opportunity to live in an eternal, happy place where everyone is happy, and as it says in Brahma Samhita, where Speaking is like singing, so what would singing be like there? Walking is like dancing, so we can imagine the walking there, what the dancing's like. So that's also explained, and if we hear about the spiritual world, we hear about spiritual activities, we hear about spiritual people, then we can actually get some spiritual experience by reading these books. Now, I can't say that everyone, you know, just by my, you have to accept my word for it, or the words of the author, but you can try it out yourself. We can chant Hare Krishna, anyone can chant Hare Krishna, and see whether it works or not. Anyone could read these books and find out if there's actual knowledge. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's supposed to be the source of everything, all beauty, all strength, all fame, all knowledge, all wealth, and all renunciation. He's supposed to be the source of everything attractive. But of all his different opulences, what we can understand and realize most easily is that he's full of knowledge. And if he's full of knowledge, his book, Bhagavad Gita, should have perfect knowledge. And the author, if he's actually a pure devotee of Krishna, repeating exactly what Krishna says for our understanding, then he should also have full knowledge. Not knowledge of who's going to win the race next week at the racetrack, or when the next pandemic is, but knowledge about important things like who we are and how to become blissfully and full of knowledge eternally. That knowledge is what's in Bhagavad Gita, for instance. And it's up to us whether we want to study it, understand it, put it into practice, and hopefully get some experience from it, and then judge whether it works or not. If it doesn't work, then we'll refund your Bhagavad Gita. But you have to read it a few times. And if it does work, then you can buy another Bhagavad Gita. In any case, the basic message is there's nothing to be envious about, because Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful and intelligent. He's unlimitedly powerful, etc. But he loves everyone. And therefore, he uses all his opulence, his love, his beauty, his wealth, his fame, for the service of his devotees. So if we can become his devotee, then we get the most valuable thing, Krishna. And Krishna is available for everyone. Because Krishna is so powerful, he can actually have a relationship with every living entity. So every living entity, spiritual being, has an equal opportunity to get the greatest treasure of Krishna. And all the other opulence that we have in the material world temporarily is insignificant compared to that. Someone may be faster than we are, someone may be wiser than we are, someone may be stronger than we are, someone may be wealthier than we are temporarily. But it won't make it from the material point of view. But from the spiritual point of view, if I get Krishna, then I get something much greater than anything that can be achieved in this material world. I get eternal happiness, full of bliss and knowledge, with the most wonderful person, Krishna. And nothing can compare it to that. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, we actually ended for the first time on time. Thank you very much. Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai.